Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning. So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at wliw.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. Each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com and distributed on my podcast via Audioboom and iTunes. Well, this U.S. Open is still in its first week, but it has been extraordinary. Opening night of the U.S. Open last Monday featured Serena Williams playing her first round match in this, her last U.S. Open, as she said she is evolving from the game. There were record-breaking crowds, a buzz unlike any other, celebrities from Bill Clinton and Dr. Ruth to Lindsey Vonn and Mike Tyson. Serena hadn't been playing much since an injury at Wimbledon last year, yet she got through her first-round opponent, Danka Kovacic, in straight sets. After the match, Gil King hosted a special program highlighting some of Serena's heroics. Oprah Winfrey narrated a letter to Serena, and Billie Jean King paid tribute. And then they got everybody in the entire stadium to hold up signs, and it said, "We love Serena." It was quite unusual and very compelling and a very fun way to honor Serena Williams on Monday night. And then on Wednesday night, she played a second-round match against second seed Anett Kontaveit of Estonia. And Serena rekindled some of the power and agility that she used in her prime to capture 23 major titles. Very impressive play by Serena Williams, particularly since she hasn't been playing much at all. And she disposed of Kontaveit 7-6, 2-6, 6-2. Tiger Woods was in the house. Talk about another GOAT. Gladys Knight, Spike Lee. Lots of celebrities were in the house to cheer her on Wednesday evening. Serena and her sister Venus are also playing doubles. Together, they have won 2 U.S. Open titles, 14 major doubles titles overall, and together they've won 3 Olympic golds playing doubles. Venus actually lost in the singles draw in the very first round, but we'll see how far they can get in the doubles. Serena certainly hoping to extend her journey in this, her final U.S. Open. She wants to play as long as possible and soak in all the adoration and love that she's feeling here in New York. In this show, we will visit with Christopher Clary, tennis reporter for the New York Times. Is Serena indeed the greatest of all time in women's tennis? Christopher Clary makes various points as to why this may or may not be the case. And then Dave Worsley, better known as Kiwi in the radio bullpen, which overlooks the Arthur Ashe Stadium court. He gives us a foreigner's perspective on the U.S. Open and some of the top Aussie players. Hope you enjoy this sports interview from the U.S. Open Tennis Championship. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to David Worsley, Kiwi as we know him, all the way from New Zealand to work his 14th U.S. Open, and I have the pleasure of sitting next to Kiwi this year. Normally you're behind me, Kiwi, but welcome back to New York.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ann. It's great to be back here.
And here we are on the Wednesday night of the first week of the U.S. Open, and Serena Williams just came out on the Ashe Stadium court to play her second round match, and she has the second seed up tonight, but she has said this will be her last U.S. Open. She is evolving away from tennis. I love the word evolve instead of retiring, but what were your thoughts about Monday night, opening night, and the fanfare that Serena Williams received here in New York?
Yeah, it was fantastic. It's to be expected to a certain extent. She is tennis when it comes to when it comes to the sport at the moment. Serena Williams is it in the United States.
And what are your thoughts about, I know, you know, we want to be kind of, we want her to go throughout the draw, right? But, I mean, this is a tough match for her. She's playing the second seed. Serena clearly hasn't played much. She was injured last year at Wimbledon. What is this, her fifth or sixth match all year? And I thought she looked pretty decently to get through her opening round match. But what do you think about the playing the second seed?
Yeah, I guess the second seed is such a big step up from a player who was ranked 80 in her first round to now second seed, ranked number two, has done very well in the world, and also is just quicker, faster, more powerful. Annette Kontaveit from Estonia is a very good player, and this is where Serena Williams may actually have a little bit of a struggle, because the ball is going to come back a lot faster. She's not going to be as intimidated by the crowd as her previous opponent was.
Serena is here to get through as many as she can, obviously, in the singles draw. And then she's going to be playing with her sister Venus in the women's doubles, which should be a highlight as well. As a guy from the other side of the world, right, how do you see all the fanfare about Serena? Is she as popular over in New Zealand and Australia as she is, say, here in New York?
Oh, I'm not going to be popular with this, because, no, she's not. She's not actually the big fan favorite, and that's fine. She came to New Zealand and actually won one of her last ever tournaments. She won the women's event in Auckland. And, she had an issue the year before where she really let rip, as we'll call it, and didn't like how windy it was, didn't like how well she played, didn't like much, actually. So she lost in the first round of the tournament to, I think it was Madison Brengel or something like that, who stood courtside and said, I don't know how I did this. But the next year, Serena came back and enjoyed it and won the title. So, yeah, she's got a little bit of a, you know, some people liked her, some people don't. And then when they see her play, a lot of people are like, yeah, we think you're a great player. Sometimes the attitude doesn't stretch as far as New Zealand and Australia.
I gotcha, because she has so many fans here, but obviously you and I have witnessed many of her meltdowns on the Ash Stadium court as well. But being from New Zealand, Australia, and I know I'm categorizing both obvious countries. I've been in New Zealand, gorgeous place, by the way. But Margaret Court, the woman who owns the all-time singles Grand Slam record at 24, what's the attitude about, you know, this whole debate about the GOAT, the greatest of all time in women's tennis? A lot of people are saying Serena Williams is. Obviously, Margaret Court has one more title, Grand Slam singles title. What's the argument like on that side of the world as far as where Serena stands as far as that argument goes?
Well, I think people have short memories, so they are thinking in the current, and they see Serena Williams as the best. Margaret Court won in a I won't even call it semi-professional. It was the amateur era and then into the semi-professional, professional era. So she was over, you know, when it was just go and hit and enjoy and have fun. Yeah, it was competitive. But then she came into the professional era. So it's over two, two different eras. Whereas Serena's been in pro all the time, albeit that her life has been in the microscope, particularly in the last 10 or so years with social media, where social media has shown us every single aspect of her life that she wants to show and probably doesn't want to show. And that's been something different. Margaret Court is acknowledged. She has a court named after her. It's like the second court at the Australian Open, Margaret Court Arena. She has courted controversy, using a silly pun there, but she has got controversy because of some of her views on different aspects of life. And some players haven't liked that either. And organizers have to tread carefully that she doesn't say things at the wrong time, particularly if she presents the trophy at the Australian Open. So, yeah, tread carefully. I think the people that the Australian sporting public really acknowledge and admire more are obviously Rod Laver, Yvonne Goolagong, and currently Ash Barty, who is retired from the game.
Right. I mean, you just named three iconic, especially Rod Laver, Yvonne Goolagong, and then I was going to ask you about Ashley Barty, who won the French Open in 2019, Wimbledon in 2021, and after she won the Australian Open this year, she decides to retire. This is a young woman. Now, she kind of left the game years ago and played cricket, then came back and decided to retire for good. Was the sports world surprised with her decision most recently this year?
I think the international sports world was. Perhaps the Australian sports world wasn't as much, because they actually admired her for being her own independent person. She didn't do it because of contracts or a sponsor saying you should do this, or a manager saying no, you have to earn more money. She was like, no, I don't care. I'm going to do this because I want to and because of what I enjoy. As you said, she was a top junior tennis player, and then felt there was too much pressure on her as she became pro. So she went and played cricket, was very good at it as well. Then came back to tennis and obviously did so well. As you said, 3 Grand Slams. And now she may even play pro golf, because her partner, fiance, is a golfer. He's not a professional, but he's a golf pro at a club, at a good club. And she's taken it up, and she's good. As you'd expect, she's going to be good at every single sport. She's just that sort of person. And people love that she makes it up her own mind. She's not pressured. You should do this. You should do that. Your sponsor said, here's $10 million to do this. She's like, no, I don't care. Isn't that great?
I love it. I just think, I as you say, I agree with you. I so admire that. And can you imagine if she's good enough to become a professional golfer and wants to become a professional golfer? That would be unprecedented, right? Going from professional tennis to professional golf.
Yeah, it would be. It would be fantastic. I guess we have a kind of link to that extent with the Corders, because they are Peter Corder and his wife, I've forgotten her name, she was a pro as well. And Peter Corder won the Australian Open in 1998. And then his daughters are obviously very good. In fact, his son's playing on court at the moment. So we've got
Sebastian, exactly, yeah. The Corder family. And that's a whole other story, right? What a sports family that is, with Nellie Corder and Jessica Corder tearing it up on the LPGA Tour. And Sebastian doing very well now on the ATP. And but, you know, can you imagine Ashley Barty going from being a tennis champion to a golf champion? That would, and she has the talent to do it if she puts her mind to it.
Oh, definitely so. And she's that sort of person. And she would be admired and loved. And I think certainly golf in Australia would love it.
Where do you stand on the GOAT debate?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, when you compare generations, technology, etc., the rackets, you know, they're so different compared to even back in the, 90s, let alone early 2000s, they're different rackets. I remember Iga Świątek, she actually said, you know, we play with different balls here at the US Open. Why are women playing with slightly different balls compared to the men? Sure, back years ago, the women may not have been as strong, but now we are strong enough to hit with the same balls. So, you know, when you consider that sort of thing, the women are training hard. You know, they're working on it. They're not necessarily muscle, but they are strong. So, you know, compared to, I'm not saying that Chris Evert wasn't strong, but she wasn't built training the same way. She hit a lot of balls in training, all new balls as well. But, you know, that's just one of those things. When you're comparing generations, things change, whether it's 10 years ago, although you look at, this is the 23rd Grand Slam for Venus Williams, 23rd U.S. Open for Venus Williams. So, yeah, it's very difficult to compare. I think Serena, to me, is arguably the greatest with her record as a player. However, to me, her reputation is just soiled a little bit, because, 5 occasions, and I've been here for all of them, fairly certain I've been here for all of them, where she has really dirtied the water with what she's actually done on court. And people can agree or disagree on that, but there's rules and she's broken them. And whether she's a mother or not, that doesn't mean anything to me. You know, there's rules.
Right. She did have some ugly instances on the court. And, you know, she says that those have fueled her to become, you know, just, she likes playing, I guess, with, you know, maybe a little chip on her shoulder or from that anger that she feels, you know, some calls were obviously not fair and against her. And I guess she looks at those overall as just part of her personality, that what has fueled her to go so far in the game.
Yeah, but the rules weren't against her. You know, it's like
But she thought they were.
Yeah, exactly. It's like having a speeding fine. You know, well, you know, that rule's stupid. That law's stupid. Well, whether it's stupid or not is not the point. You know that the rule is this, so don't try and break it. And that's where she got herself into so much trouble. But, that's not to take away that she's a fantastic player, ever. It's just that it's just muddied the water a little bit.
So Sure, there's always a little asterisk as far as when you talk about Serena Williams being the GOAT. But it's certainly her impact off the course, Kiwi, off the court, has just been incredible as far as bringing more people into the game and inspiring, you know, just so many different people, young and old, to follow their dreams. I mean, you look at her, you know, where she came from, Compton, California, and what she's been able to do. She's now a superstar, you know, player, businesswoman, and mother, and to come that far from Compton, California, where the girls literally came from nothing, is quite an inspirational story.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it is a great story. It's been a movie. It is fantastic when, if it can give hope to particularly a young black girl somewhere around the world, somewhere around the United States, who maybe is thinking, gee, I want to get better at everything and do better, then that's fantastic. Then even if it's just one kid that sees that, feels that, then I think even Serena will go, then my role here is done.
Right, and I think that influence is very obvious, and particularly, as you say, with social media. I mean, it's just been incredible in the last, 10 years, what you know, the influence and impact she's had on so many people, maybe due to social media. Let's talk about some of the young guns out there in the guys' draw. Nick Kyrgios, I was just reading, has been fined more than any other player on the ATP. He's certainly a personality that's quite compelling.
Oh, that's right. I mean, he's the sort of guy that you can love, you can hate, you can... Whenever his name is mentioned, there is a love-hate relationship from just about everybody. Whenever I write something or say his name, it's amazing just the response. And that's good, because when you think about it, if you see him practice or anywhere around a court, the younger people go to him. You know, yeah, Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, that's nice. But that's nice for older people. However, when people see Kyrgios practice, see the way he walks, the way he talks, how way he dresses, younger people, and he's not young anymore, but younger people go, I want to be like him. Sorry, Roger, it's nice that you've won this. Sorry, Federer. You know, sorry, Nadal. I want to be like Nick Kyrgios. You know, and so he brings in people just like Serena does, but he brings in a different kind of people. When half the time he wants to go and play basketball, he didn't like tennis for a while. You know, that's fine. He's fantastic, incredibly talented. He really is, and he's incredibly generous with his money and his time as well. He gives away a lot of money and time to charity. Yeah, sure, he has issues on court because he is so intense and has so many options that he can struggle with that.
We're watching him right now. He's in the fourth set in his second round match out here at the U.S. Open against Frenchman Bonzi. It's 2-2, and he's up 2-1. It's 2-2 in the fourth. But so he had a good run at Wimbledon. He got to the finals. He lost to Djokovic. Djokovic beat him in four sets. But is he talented enough to keep that going? Do you see him in more finals in his future?
Well, there's always that question, isn't there, with someone like Kyrgios. Can he focus for that long? I mean, already in this match, he talks a lot to himself, to his players' box. He had a go at them in the first round. Why aren't you supporting me enough? I mean, what do you say to that? He's the sort of player who, when he's playing for someone else, like when he played doubles at the Australian Open with Kokkinakis, his good friend, he was so hyped up. I mean, it went a little bit wild, some of the doubles matches, but he was so hyped up because he was playing for someone else. And they went and won the tournament. And that's the sort of thing. When he's playing for himself, it's like, yeah, okay, I don't care. Yeah, so what? I win another $100,000 for this. That doesn't mean so much to him. But when he's playing for someone, for someone else, that's when he really devotes himself to the cause. And generally, he focuses. But when he does focus, he is arguably one of the most talented on the ATP Tour right now. Okay, in many ways, like McEnroe. McEnroe was one of the most talented with talent, but he needed to focus it. When he did, he won.
And the 18th seed here at the U.S. Open from Australia, Alex Demonaura, he's playing well.
Oh, yeah, the Demon is, he's, Demon. Yeah, the Demon, yeah, it's a great nickname. Well, yeah, Demonaura's, he's only 23. He made the quarterfinals of the U.S. Open in 2020. He's solid. He is quick, like mega quick. He's like a Michael Chang speed around the court. He is phenomenal to watch his footwork, and he's playing pretty well. He dropped one set today, but he said, well, you know, hey, if I can win the other two, I can come back and win it completely, and he did. He is someone who's could go far. I think in, you know, quarterfinals potentially for the Demon. Watch out for the Demon. Come on, you've got to love it.
Who's your pick to win the men's draw?
I would love to see Medvedev win it again. I really like the way he plays. He plays just about every single shot off balance as well. When you watch him play, it's not the right balance for a tennis coach to say, this is how you should hit the ball. He's got a great personality. It's a strange situation for anybody from Russia or Belarus at the moment that they are not allowed to have their flag next to their name, which is just weird. You know, he couldn't play Wimbledon, but he can play here. Djokovic could play Wimbledon, but couldn't play here, even though he was finalist last time. How does that all work? Don't know. Throw a pack of cards up in the air and see how they land.
It's too bad to, you know, bring politics and then the U.S. vaccination policy into it. Yes, I know what's fair for everybody should be fair for Djokovic, but it's too bad he's not here to play in the U.S. Open, and it's too bad he couldn't play at the Australian Open. I mean, the guy's, you know, he's losing time with collecting major titles, and this is the prime of his career.
Yeah, exactly. He's in the prime, possibly on the starting to go down. But, I mean, hey, Nadal keeps on going. Federer, obviously not here. But, yeah, Medvedev, to me, is a fantastic player to watch because he does have that personality. And we remember, was it about 4 years ago, when he did a couple of silly things on the court. The crowd booed him, and then he said, thanks. You know, keep booing me. This is helping me. And then he came and made it through to the final. And the crowd kept on booing him in a nice way. And he loved it. And everybody thought, hey, this guy's fun. And yeah, it was fantastic watching him then, and he has a lot of personality. He's ungainly in the way he sort of walks. He's about 6'6". He doesn't necessarily look like an athlete. Everything he does is slightly different, which makes him fun. And that's the sort of thing we want. We want the Kyrgios. We want the Medvedev, because otherwise you get people saying, oh, tennis is boring. Well, no, give me Kyrgios, and you won't get boring anymore.
We like the personalities for sure. And obviously, that's one of the reasons Serena is so beloved, because she did lose her temper. She wasn't afraid to not say anything. She fought back. And now she's playing in the first set against the second seed, Kondavit. And it will be interesting to see if, you know, Serena can show any magic of all and come back and continue her singles run here at the U.S. Open. Now, you're from the other side of the world, I keep saying. What do you all think of the U.S. Open when you come here compared to the other majors? I know you cover the Australian Open, you cover the French, you cover Wimbledon. And you can be critical, because I know a lot of the players think it's pretty crazy and hectic here. But what are the thoughts from the players and from people who aren't from this country?
What's interesting, each slam there's an aspect of its city. So when you go to the Australian Open and Melbourne, it can get really hot. Like, you know, 110, no problem. Like at least four or five times, maybe more, during the tournament. People are in almost watching in bikinis and things like that. And that's true. You know, you see people walking around bikini top. There's a concert going on. You know, people like Billy Idol playing. It's like, kind of, wow, take you back. You know, there's crazy things. And it's right in the middle of town. You can finish at 3 a.m. and you're 5 minutes walk from the hotels. It's right along the river. It's fantastic. So you've got the kind of relaxed summer feel. Then you go to the French, which is stylish and sexy. You know, it's the Parisian. It's just stylish. Nothing necessarily works, but it doesn't matter. You're having a glass of great wine and it looks good. So you've got that sort of stylishness of Paris. You go to Wimbledon and you've got the pomp and ceremony. And it's very, you know, royal family, British type thing. And there is the royal family going there, or members of the royal family going to Wimbledon each year. So you have that. You come to New York. What would you expect from New York? Craziness. And you get it. You get New York at the tennis. It is crazy. You've got a band. You've got a musician playing next door to the court that you're playing on. You've got someone else yelling to sell something. You've got, you know, the smoke from a barbecue or whatever coming through. You've got another court's calls coming over your court. You've got a whole lot of people who are just standing in the way of everything. You've got people coming at you trying to get out to the venue.
Traffic is crazy.
Oh, traffic's nuts. And I mean, this is where the Australian Open's love so much, because it's right in the middle of the city. But you've got all those things happening. And it's just crazy. It's hot in the humid sense, which is difficult. I think players would rather have the heat rather than heat and humidity. So, yeah, they think it's nuts. Like, I've had three players over the last couple of days call it a zoo. And some have called it worse. But, you know, when you're on the big courts, that's fine. But on the outside courts, and you've still got, you know, thousands of people around you at times, it is crazy and a bit like a zoo. But the court's still the same size, so you have to focus on that. But everything else going on around you, if you're mentally weak, well, it's going to nail you.
Wow, Serena Williams just fought back against a break point and held her serve. It is now 2-2 in this first set against a second seed, Anett Kontaveit from Estonia. Well, David, it's good visiting with you. It's always good to get your perspective, being that you travel so far to come here to New York. And welcome back, by the way, because I know it's been a number of years with COVID, and you guys couldn't even leave your country for a number of years, right?
Well, we could leave the country. It's just about getting back into it. You know, so whereas Australia, they weren't even allowed to leave and come back.
Right.
You know, New Zealand was actually kind of a funny, kind of very outdoor-y, kind of chilled place. Everybody relaxed. It was quite strange. So different countries did things in different ways. The 2020, there was no media allowed in the tournament. 2021, it just didn't seem right to travel to here, because for me, it's 3 hours if I go via Australia. 3 hours, then 14 hours, then 5 hours across the US. So yeah, sitting in a plane for a long time. But it's great to be back. And I mean, I do love this place, even though it's a love-hate relationship at times. I don't want to get to the hate, but you know, it can wear you out. But it's great to be here.
Well, we're glad you're here, Kiwi. Thanks so much for joining us on Sports Interview, and continued success. Enjoy the rest of your time. And I know it can be very hectic to travel back and forth from the city to come here at the U.S. Open, but I know you'd love it. And you'd come, I'm sure you'll come as often as you can, right, to come back to the Big Apple and work the tennis.
I'll keep on trying. And yeah, I keep on having fun no matter what.
Thanks so much.
Billy Weinbaum from ESPN. Serena, how would you describe both the experience and how you're playing right now?
The experience was really good. I think you can only have this experience, you know, once in a lifetime for sure. I'm playing pretty good. I feel like I said on the court, I've been practicing really well, but it hasn't been coming together in matches. But, you know, now it's kind of coming together, I guess. I mean, I had to bring it together today, so it worked out.
Okay. Matt.
Hi, Serena. Matt Futterman from the New York Times. Novak has talked about going into the bathroom in between sets and splashing water on his face and giving himself a talking to himself out loud. Did you do anything like that, or what happened in between those sets, because you came out, obviously, with a much higher level than you did in the second set?
Yeah, no, I just got lighter. Use your imagination. But it wasn't number two. So.
Continue. Tara.
Hi, Serena. Tara Sullivan from the Boston Globe. I wanted to ask you this before it started, but I'll ask it now. Can you win this tournament, and are you any more convinced of that based on how you played tonight?
I cannot think that far. I don't. I'm here just to, like I said, I'm having fun, and I'm enjoying it. And then, honestly, I've had so many tough matches the last, I don't know how long, that I just feel like just being prepared for everyone that I play is just going to be really, really difficult and get through those moments.
Craig.
Serena, Craig Gabriel, Nine Radio, Australia. Just on the point of matches, Ida Tomljanovic is next, and she's been saying that she didn't want your career to end without her having an opportunity to play you. What are your thoughts going into that one?
I think it's good. She's been playing, you know, pretty intense, and I've been actually watching her matches a lot, and I saw her play last week or a week and a half ago. And yeah, so I just, She's been through a lot of injuries, and so I kind of respect that. I think it's going to be a good match, but that's not what you asked. You asked the fact that she wanted to play me. I think it's good. I think, you know, like I said, I have to be ready for every match.
Back, Ava.
Serena, Ava Wallace from the Washington Post. There's obviously been so much kind of ceremony around this tournament for you. Have you tried to focus in on the match and block everything else out, if that's been your tactic, as opposed to maybe embracing it and embracing the moment? And if so, how have you been able to do that?
I've been doing a little bit of both. I think I've mostly been kind of blocking everything out, but then at the same time, I've been embracing a little bit of it because I also want to enjoy the moment because, I think these moments are clearly fleeting. So for me, it's really about having a little embrace, but also understanding that I'm here to focus, you know, and do the best that I can this time.
Howard.
Hi, Serena. Howard Fendricks with the Associated Press. You recently returned from a year off the tour. Are these the kinds of nights, the kinds of moments, the kinds of matches that you really missed while you were away? And was it kind of a thrill to be back out in that atmosphere and locked in the third set of a match at a Grand Slam tournament in a full stadium like that?
Yeah, for me, it's been... I don't know if I missed it. I didn't really think about it, really. I just was focused on other things, and quite frankly, I just started hitting the ball, and I was like, I think I could come back out. And so, here I am.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Christopher Clary, sports and tennis correspondent for the New York Times. Chris, welcome to the show. So glad to have you.
And what a night tonight's going to be, huh?
Exactly. Now, Serena Williams, you wrote a great column on her a couple of days ago, and it was really all about whether or not Serena can be labeled the GOAT, the greatest of all time. And, you know, it's very debatable. I mean, a lot of people say absolutely, but you made a good point for a couple different answers to that question.
You know, I kind of hesitated to write this thing now, but I felt like, you know, I've been covering tennis a long time, you know, 35 years. Obviously knew people like Bud Collins very, very well. Had a lot of discussions over the years about how great the players of the past were. I grew up watching people like Navratilova and Everett, and I covered a lot of Steffi Graf. So I just feel like having seen Serena and having seen what she has to do in her career, I feel like it's an amazing career. But there have been other amazing careers. And right now, the whole momentum is toward GOAT posters and GOAT announcements, and the USTA is announcing her as the greatest of all time when she walks on court. I get all that. But for me, it's very clear when you look at the record that it's not a slam dunk. Serena belongs 100% in the conversation, but it's not a conclusive conversation for me. And I think it's worth pointing it out now because this is the moment in time when a lot of things get concretized and solidified. This is a huge moment in our culture, massive in the sport. And so I think these articles and these things that are written now will be used as reference points. So I kind of wanted to get that on the record.
I agree, Christopher. I mean, I've been here. This is my 40th U.S. Open. Can you believe it? And I've watched every single one of her matches here on the Ash Court. But I also watched Steffi Graf. I watched Martina Navratilova. And as you pointed out, Steffi Graf's career winning percentage, 89%. She won 22 Grand Slams, but she played less. And Martina made a point that, you know, Grand Slams back then weren't as important as they are now. So it's really hard to compare from one decade to the next.
Yeah, I think you should judge people based on the standards of their day, what they were required in their minds to do to be excellent and to achieve greatness. And I think a lot of those players, not a lot, but there are a few who have achieved that over time according to the standards of their time. You can even go back to Helen Wills Moody if you want, who like won over 100 matches in a row and, you know, won, you know, 19 majors and basically only played, I think, 25 of them. So she had an incredible winning percentage. It's hard to imagine Helen Wills beating Serena Williams, even with modern technology, but you can't deny her own greatness in her era. So all you can do is chase who's in front of you in your time. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the arguments for Serena, that she was so dominant with those two Serena slams. But if you look at her record week to week, and the number one weeks, you know, Graf and Navratilova did more in that department, and so did Chrissy Everett, to be honest.
That's right. Chrissy Evert won 157 tournament single titles. Martina, 167 singles titles. Serena, 73. So it's fair to say, much like a lot of the top golfers in the sport today, you know, she really played the majors. And she worked to compete in those majors. And that's kind of a different mindset today than it was back when Martina and Chrissy played.
It is. And, you know, Martina and Chrissy were following up in the early years of the women's tour. They were still in the pioneer group, I think you could put it that way. I mean, Billie Jean and her crew were the real pioneers there, but Martina and Chrissy were very much the next wave. And they had a tour to support and a tour to really bolster and to make legitimate, and they had to spend a lot of their time doing that. That doesn't mean that Serena's a lesser player. It just means she had a different set of, I think, obligations and things pulling at her. And honestly, I don't think it's to the sport's benefit, frankly, that the majors have become so important. I think a lot of great tennis gets lost along the way and diminished because of the fact that week to week it's not followed as closely anymore. But in Chrissy and Martina's world, it was more. And there was much less of a disparity between things. So that's the world they were living in. That's their excellence. But Serena's is win the majors and you will be great. And you can't say she hasn't achieved that.
That's right. 23 Grand Slam singles titles. But really, when you look at Serena Williams, you also have to look at her impact off the court. And if you could just talk a little bit about that. Obviously, everybody who comes to the U.S. Open and who are huge Serena fans appreciate her for really opening up the game to, you know, a whole other population, right? I mean, she did so much to grow the game, you know, for black athletes and for black tennis players. And so her impact, I think, is measured maybe differently than perhaps some of her, you know, some of the greats before her.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at someone like Billie Jean, obviously, who played a massive role in women's sports and women's equality in her time, or Martina with her being openly gay and really kind of facing a lot of backlash for that and being very much a pioneer socially. So those two I would point out right away as people that played roles. And, you know, Althea Gibson and Arthur Ashley don't have the same kind of a resume in terms of majors as Serena does, but they played a big role in making the world a better place for people like Serena to make it and build on that platform. So there's a lot of those things are true. Serena's situation, you know, I think it's just the visibility that she's given women's sports, not just tennis. And I think making that story of her family so clearly a pathway for so many, that has been the legacy, is that people think about the Williams as they think about Serena and Venus together still, despite the disparity in their records probably ultimately. It's still kind of a group thing in their minds. But they know the story. The film that just came out obviously doesn't hurt that. But even before that, I mean, it's one of the greatest stories in the history of sports. One of the most unlikely success stories in the history of sports. And I think that has been an engine for a lot of things, not just in tennis, but in sports as a whole. And I think if you go around the world like you and I do for our work, travel around and you ask people about, you know, sports or tennis, Serena's name comes up quickly. And not with Williams, it's Serena usually. And that's extraordinary. And I think she's, you know, really on the broader level, been an elevator for women's sports and the possibilities.
Absolutely. As far as inspiration goes, which, you know, the coming from Compton, California, and being able to inspire just generations of people, young and old, based on the fact that they can achieve anything, no matter where you're from, right? I mean, that's such an inspirational story. Her impact beyond that, Christopher, it just seems like the rest of her life is yet to be written. I think she's going to do a lot more now as a businesswoman and obviously as a mother.
Yeah, I mean, Serena hasn't always been a political animal. She's somebody who's sort of kept her distance from some of those things over the years because of, I think maybe she's a Jehovah's Witness, that's part of it. They don't get too involved in political issues. They don't vote, don't celebrate birthdays, things like that. And also, I think, to be honest, and actually talking to Corey Goff the other day, Coco Gauff's dad, about this, he goes, well, part of the reason maybe is because they paid a much higher price than today's generation did for speaking out on these things. And look at Martina Navratilova, hardly got an endorsement after she came out as openly gay. And so I feel like there was pretty clear to the Williams family, and we wanted to make it economically, there was a backlash for that potentially if you got too outspoken on a lot of issues. So that could explain some of it. But as far as her impact in terms of broadening the base of women's sport and tennis, I've been talking to a lot of fans this week, and I was doing the same thing in Cincinnati. It is really amazing to hear the people's just emotion and sense of gratitude for being brought into the game by Serena and by Venus. It is a bit of a group thing. And that's certainly, you can look around the stands at a lot of these tennis tournaments that used to be kind of all-white provinces, and you're seeing a whole lot more rainbow coalition now, and that's very cool.
Hypothetically, and I have to ask you this question because you've seen them all play. If they were all playing today and they're at their prime, Serena, Martina, Steffi, Chrissy, who would be the top player?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't think it's – I think I've written in the past that I think Serena on her best day with that serve and that strike power and that ability to cover the court she had when she was a bit younger as well and that just incredible grit and self-confidence that she had, I think I'd give her the nod. But yeah, it depends on the surface. You put them on clay, you put Steffi Graf on clay, maybe even Chrissy. Chrissy wouldn't be as fast or as athletic maybe, but Chrissy's awful tough, awful consistent. Give her the right material and put her on that surface she loves so much. I don't know. But Steffi, I think, with her speed and her explosive nature and that powerful forehand and that wickedly sliced backhand, give her the same material, I think it would be a good match. And I think Navratilova, if the courts are quick enough with her style of play, putting her up against Serena and the ability maybe to hit some chaps that bring Serena to the net where she wasn't always as comfortable, could be good. I'd like to see both those matches.
Wow, not a clear-cut answer. I would say Serena just for her sheer power. Christopher, I mean, just when, you know, her serve is working and she gets her ground strokes work. I mean, she's just overpowering based on her size and power.
The only thing I'd say is that's material too, right? I mean, that she has had that amazing power, strike power. She and Venus changed the game that way, but they came along with the, you know, rackets that were and string that were able to manage that and handle that. And some of Serena's best tennis has been played with big-headed rackets and new string, able to control, put a little bit more spin on the ball, give herself a bit of a plan B. I don't know. I mean, if you gave athletes and competitors of the quality of Navratilova and Graf, maybe even Margaret Court, you know, that kind of material, and let them train with it and play with it, I still think you're right because that serve would have been an amazing weapon in any era. But you put Serena with a wooden racket, you put the old generation with this new stuff, I want to see that.
That would just be so great to watch. All right, so how would you describe the fanfare here for Serena's departure from the game compared to all the other greats that you've covered here?
Look, I mean, I've done a lot of sports too, and like you, I mean, I felt like a World Cup final Monday night in soccer, you know, or NBA Game 7 a little bit. It had that kind of vibe to it, you know. But in tennis terms, I'd never seen anything like that. I mean, Davis Cup back in its heyday was certainly amazing and loud and partisan, but just that sort of single-player celebration like that with all that sort of Hollywoodian trapping around it, I've never seen anything like that. And it was cool, too, because let's face it, this court for Serena, Ash Stadium, been a lot of ups and downs here. She has some bad moments here as well as some great moments. You can look at it objectively and say there could be some ambivalence in the stands about Serena at the U.S. Open. Did not feel any of that. All I felt was, we're going to give you what you deserve, and that's going to be, we're going to give you love, we're going to give you a loud response, we're going to give you support, and we want to celebrate you. And it was cool. But I got some goosebumps, which for me at this stage is rare.
Exactly. Monday night was very special. Day one, or the first evening, the opening evening here was just extraordinary, and I'd never seen anything like it in all the years I've been here. And yet, you know, you and I have covered many of her meltdowns here on Ash Court. We've seen temper tantrums. We've seen just things that were shocking and words coming out of her mouth that were utterly surprising. And yet somehow she was able to turn that all around, right? And really make it a positive.
Look, I don't know if it's a positive or just that the arc of her career, you look at the whole thing, her whole body of work, and you look at that, I mean, it's so impressive. And, you know, I think Americans, like many cultures, we admire perseverance. We admire people who endure, people who go through stuff, find a way to bounce back, rebound, and come back at you. And this is symbolic of that, right? I mean, you got Serena at almost 41 out there against girls who are more than half her age, and she's still out there swinging and still fighting, and people respect that. You kind of earn that. And that's a bit like Connors, right? Go back to that U.S. Open and Krikstein and all that sort of thing, that semifinal run. I'm not sure Serena's going that far, but it's a little bit of a similar vein to that, I would say.
So talk about the women's draw. Who knows how far Serena will go in this U.S. Open. She did say that she's evolving away from tennis, and you know, she hasn't played hardly at all, right? She's won two matches and what she's played five. But who do you think in the women's draw will prevail? It's just so every year it just doesn't seem like, you know, there's a clear-cut winner or dominant figures in the women's game of late.
Well, Ann, I think, you know, if we can flash back just a couple of months, we had a dominant player in women's tennis. Iga Swiatek won 37 matches in a row and I think seven tournaments or six. I think it was seven. And clear number one by more than double the margin in points. So if Iga Swiatek can return to that level that she had French Open and before that, after Ash Barty retired, then we do have a dominant player in women's tennis. She played at that level, and she was so confident, so devastating with her game, kicked the ball early. She's so athletic. And I think has a real system and plan in place to last. But she hasn't shown us that in the last three or four tournaments, lost early. A lot to kind of absorb. I think she was mentally and even physically a bit tired. Looked good in her opening match. Got a good test against Sloane Stephens coming up. So for me, if Iga can kind of get herself back to where she was, then you have that legitimate favorite. If she does not, it is wide open, very much so. You can see people like Coco Gauff making a breakthrough. Jessie Pegula could go even deeper than she's gone. You've got someone like Kvitova, who could have like a last renaissance. He played awfully well in Cincinnati. You've got great players who haven't quite broken through at the slams, like Bencic, the Olympic gold medal champion. I watched Danielle Collins in Osaka last night. I was here till after midnight. Danielle Collins is playing great ball. Not serving so great, but just striking the ball unbelievably. Looks super fresh and competitive. Aussie Open finalist. I honestly think if Swiatek slips back where she's been the last month or so, there are 25 players who could win this tournament.
Yeah, it's wide open. And speaking of Osaka, what do you think her future holds, Christopher? I mean, it's just so – she's so unpredictable mentally.
Obviously watched her all the time like all of us do. Watched the match last night. I think she's still playing some awfully good ball. That match last night was super competitive, and Danielle had a high level. When she lost in the Australian Open to Anisimova, again, she was playing pretty well. It's a little bit monotone at times. Slug, slug, slug. She's not the most natural mover compared to some of the athletes who are coming up now and players who are coming up, you know, and starting to emerge. Someone like Swiatek, for example. So that could be a problem for her. But I think she just needs to play more tennis and really commit to the sport. Unfortunately, she doesn't have the margin that she can come in as a part-time player and some of the confidence issues and timing issues that she has and dominate. It's just not going to happen.
It's too bad because she's, gosh, two-time U.S. Open champion, and you just never know what to expect with Osaka, right? She's so sensitive, which is a good thing. And if you're not a competitor, right, you have to be as tough as nails, I guess. Emma Raducanu. Will she ever get back? I know she's only 19 years old, but after winning the U.S. Open title last year, you know, it's been a little disappointing to see her results. And you know, she has, boy, talk about success off the court. You know, she's made so much money. People are thinking, well, maybe she doesn't have the hunger left.
Look, I mean, she shouldn't have to apologize for what happened last year. That was extraordinary. It was a true fairy tale in sports. I mean, no one's ever qualified and won a Grand Slam. She didn't lose a set in any of her matches. We all watched it. It was real. It happened. Did she have the hardest draw? No. Beat some good players along the way. But what she did was extraordinary. So she'll always have that. She's already a champion. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure there's a whole lot of precedence for somebody who does that ultimate thing at that age and then has to find a way to actually then become a real player after that. So that's her challenge. She's a smart person. Seems very much self-motivated. But her game, if you look at it, you know, week to week, is not the kind of game that's going to dominate the tour. She's a good athlete. She moves very fluidly, has great timing off both sides. She can, you know, redirect, counterpunch, serves not bad, even good. But there's not a lot of greatness in anything, one particular element there. So she's good for her to build another Grand Slam singles title is going to be a huge challenge. Can she be a top 20 player instead of number 80, which is or 79, which she'll be next week? Yes, I think so. She has that kind of shot-making ability and that kind of speed and movement. But her game is not a next-generation, change-the-game kind of game.
Great points. Rafael Nadal, let's move to the men real quick. Back at the U.S. Open for the first time since 2019 when he won here. Great to have him back, but, you know, is he 100% with that abdominal issue? I mean, it's hard to tell, but he had a great test in his opening round.
Yeah, I'd never seen Rinky Hichikata play. I enjoyed that very much, especially that first set was spectacular. I know, it's great. Rinky's going to, exactly, you don't need to go with the second name there, though. The surname doesn't matter. But, you know, Rafa, how can you count him out? Looking at the speeds on the serve, second and first, he's back to normal. So if he really was being troubled by that stomach, he wouldn't be able to do that because you got to snap. Right. So I think he's in pretty fine fettle that way. But obviously watched him play first round in Cincy, lost to Chorich. Didn't play his best match by any means. A little rusty, and last night was not his best match either. So, but Rafa has a way of working his way in, and he has so much great muscle and mental memory from this season, so many great successes. He's won so many big points and done so well. I cannot count him out. I'd be stupid to count him out. But I do think he's not some big favorite coming in by any means. He's maybe right up there with Medvedev as one of the kind of lightly co-favorites, I would say.
And so who do you think is going to prevail in the men's?
Look, I learned long ago I am much better at talking about it after the fact than I am before. That's why I'm still doing the sports writing gig. But I would say that, you know, it's, again, more wide open than we've seen at a men's open, U.S. Open in a while. And I think not having Novak here certainly hurts the overall vibe. I mean, he shouldn't be here unless they change the rules for the entire, you know, governmental policy. You shouldn't make an exception for a tennis player, I don't think. But not having him here takes away the big, who would have been the big hardcourt favorite, I think. But they're guys, you know, who could make deep runs. You can look at a guy like Carreño Busta, who I'm sure Americans go, please don't have Carreño Busta win the U.S. Open because he doesn't have a kind of a personality they can connect with. But he's a great hardcourt player, two semifinals here. He's in great form. A guy like that can make a deep run. Kyrgios, I still have my doubts about whether he can play seven best-of-five matches and in the heat, keep his head and game together, but he's playing the best tennis of his life consistently now. I guess if I had to pick, I just think Medvedev's too good on a hard court not to pop at some point this season. He was so close in Australia to beating Rafa. He's been through a lot with the Russian situation, trying to navigate that. He had a hernia operation, missed almost the whole thing in clay. But I think he's building up to this. And when he's on, we've all seen, he is a very, very hard man to get past on a hard court.
And Christopher, I can't let you go until we talk about your guy, the subject of your latest book, Roger Federer. What is going on with Roger, and do you think he will ever return to competitive tennis?
Well, first of all, he's not my guy, but I have written a lot about him, that's for sure. And I got to keep my journalistic objectivity here. But he is somebody who I think people are always interested in, me included, and you know, he's 41 years old now, heading toward 42. And I honestly have my doubts he'll ever win another Grand Slam singles title. It's hard to envision that. But can Roger, if he can move when he comes back from these knee operations, and I know he's going to know the answer to that very quickly. If he can move, the racket skills have not gone away. The beating competitive heart has not gone away. And you put him best of three or even best of five on the right surface against anybody on a given day, he could win, I think. But he has to be able to move. So he's going to come back at Laver Cup, Basel, from what I've been told. He'll try there, and he'll know, I think, at the end of those where he's really at. And if he feels like he's okay, he'll definitely play 2023.
Wouldn't it be great? So at least we'd have the opportunity to do a farewell tour for the great Roger Federer.
I'm not sure he wants a long tour. He has Stefan Edberg was his coach for a while, and Edberg always said his biggest mistake was announcing the year before he stopped that he was going to stop at the end of the following year. So every stop on the tour became like bouquets of flowers, parting gifts and speeches. Stefan was miserable. So he told Roger, never do that. And I think Roger listened. So when he does it, it'll be, I think, relatively abrupt. Maybe like, I think this is not a bad template, what Serena and Agassi did, right? You don't do it right away on the day, but at least you say, all right, I'm stopping soon. Or as Andre said at Wimbledon, I'm stopping at the U.S. Open. That's how it'll be, I think.
Well, Christopher Clary, thank you so much. Always appreciate your insight, continued success, and enjoy the rest of the U.S. Open.
You too, Anne. Thanks so much for having me.
My thanks to Christopher Clary, to Dave Worsley, and to Mike Goodsound Production. As Oprah Winfrey once said, you define your own life. Don't let other people write your script. Well, Serena Williams has certainly written her own script throughout her legendary career. Enjoy the U.S. Open tennis, everyone, and I look forward to talking to you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Anne LaGore.